For members only. Golf Smarter number 338, published on June 19, 2012, is brought to you by our Golfers Mart, now featuring the Golf Smarter Switchblade Divot Repair Tool with removable ball marker, available at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Two good rounds, 19th hole stories with author Alyssa Gaday.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Alyssa.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well and very excited that you contacted me so we can talk about your book because it's unique in the golf world. I've not seen anything like it, and it's refreshing as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun.
That's a pun already. It's refreshing because you're talking about cocktails with the pros.
Yes, we are. Two good rounds. So it's a play in a round of golf and a round of drinks. So it's two good rounds, 19-hole stories from the world's greatest golfers. And what I did is I went out and I interviewed 36 of the top golfers in the world, male and female, mostly male, and I asked them all the same five questions. You know, what's your favorite drink? It didn't have to be alcoholic. Favorite drink, your favorite 19th hole or grill room, your favorite 19th hole story or memory, if you ever got a hole in one, and if you bought the clubhouse around.
And how long did you work on developing those questions before you decided those were the five questions, or did it just kind of happen one day?
No, I mean, I definitely went out and had those questions in mind and asked every single one of them, and sometimes they got them in advance so they knew what I would be asking. Those same five questions because we wanted to have kind of a consistency. And I think it also gives you, you know, compare and contrast. Well, somebody likes the tap room. Somebody else, you know, prefers Bay Hill men's locker room. Or I think it helped to add some, comparisons. You can look at the different pros and what they prefer and have the questions be somewhat similar.
And is this something that fascinated you from before, or are you just like, oh, this would be a good idea? I mean, how did you get to the point where going, I need to write this book?
Well, you know, we were talking before. I've been writing a column for 8 years called On the Lip, and it's a monthly column. And it's the premise of that is tour players, their interests off the course, and celebrities at golf. So always looking for things that are interesting, a little different, keeping it respectful, but, you know, fun if something like fly fishing or you know, or exotic cars or what have you, collecting wines or creating wines like Ernie Els does. When I was in Nantucket Island, I saw at the Mayakama Golf Course on their menu, they have a drink called the John Daly. And I may have heard it, but I've never actually seen it printed on a menu. And I thought, wow, that'd be a good art, you know, column. I should find out, you know, I asked them what it was. They said, oh, it was like an Arnold Palmer with vodka. So totally fun. You know, what fits in the lifestyle category. I was going to reach out to John and write something. And I thought, you know what, I really wonder what everyone, you know, what a lot of the players enjoy drinking or if they have a signature drink. Almost everybody knows about the Arnold Palmer. And I knew that a lot of them had wine brands. And I just thought it would be a really interesting, you know, as opposed to seeing an article here or there or somebody has wine, to actually pull it all together. And that's where it came from. And it just kind of, you know, seemed like easy, simple questions, and I really wanted to create a relatability. While we all can't hit it like Bubba or hit it as far as the tour players, I think we all can relate to getting together with friends after a round, telling factual or tall tales about our round, and enjoying it over a beverage and having some good laughs.
So important, as we've talked about on this show with various people, that you never do business on the golf course. You do it at the 19th hole. What you do on the golf course is you learn if you want to do business with that person because they're going to expose their character. And then if that works, then you go to the bar and you have an Arnold Palmer. So a John Daly has vodka in an Arnold Palmer. Is that what you just said?
It is. I mean, some people make it where it's iced tea, lemonade. It is very refreshing.
Because I love Arnold Palmer's and I like vodka. So
yeah, it's like a Long Island iced tea. They go down a little too easily. you can do it as iced tea, lemonade, and vodka. And then what I had learned specifically in Nantucket there, what they were using is there's Firefly iced tea. So it's vodka-infused iced tea, and then they were just adding lemonade. Hmm. Mm. It's a little different taste. It's a, I think it was a little sweeter is what I found it to be. Mm-hmm. So that's how they were doing it there.
Well, this is a family show, so we're not going to get too much depth about the value and the wonders of alcohol. But
well, Nancy Lopez's favorite drink is milk. So,
aww, a mom. And does she order that at the bar after a round of golf?
Yes, she literally, it's her favorite drink. Like, she loves milk. And she regrets that she did not, like, put it in a trophy and drink from the trophy.
Well, then she should have won the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they do?
Don't they? I know one of them. I don't know which one.
Yeah, I think it's the Indianapolis 500. Actually, because I worked at one of those, or two of those, years ago, and I know that at the end, they have milk bottles everywhere in that area, and so after somebody wins, they take a big swig out of their victory cup. But you approached various golfers, you had access to them. How did you get access, just beyond writing a column, how did you get access to these people? What was your background before that?
I originally started... I worked for the Latin Golf Tour, the TLA, Todas las Americas. Mm-hmm. And that's the tour that goes throughout Latin America. And then from there, I was hired by the PGA Tour, and I worked for them 2001 to the beginning of 2003. And myself and another gentleman, they sent us down to Mexico for 14 months, to just two of us to put on. Well, clearly there's a lot more people involved as it got going, but we were down there permanently to execute the EMC World Cup. 2002 World Cup.
Where was that?
In Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
So, yep.
Actually, recently did a show on some courses over... Wait, it was... It's probably the same course, right?
Yeah, Wyckoff and the Nicholas.
Yeah, the Vista Vallarta.
Vista Vallarta, that's where the tournament was held.
Well, there's a reminder.
The home of the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah. Casey Crandall was our guest on that show, and he talked about this course. I actually did a video. We did a little tea tour of those courses as well.
Casey's a great guy.
Yeah, he was really nice. It was really fun to talk to him. Any huge surprises that came out of this book? I want to start picking on specific people, but, obvious questions like, like Nancy Lopez drinking milk. Did you give her a look like, really?
No, I didn't really. I don't know. I didn't give her. I mean, there's some things that, until I got started with this project, I didn't know that Fuzzy Zeller had a vodka. Mm-hmm. He has his own vodka brand. Wow. I didn't.
But that's the kind of thing where a guy sells his name, right? It's not like he's making his own vodka.
Well, he's not in his backyard doing moonshine, but he is actively involved in the process, and he did do a lot of research and trying and had it really, he is really involved.
Oh, actually, that's awesome.
Because people said, oh, you should do, you should do wine, and where people are probably licensing their name or what have you.
Yeah.
But he really did get involved, and he enjoys vodka, and he thought, I don't want to do a wine, I want to do a vodka.
He worked with a distiller in
Bend, Oregon. Pardon?
I was going to say, is that where the name Fuzzy came from drinking too much vodka? No.
I don't know. I didn't ask him. That would be a good one, right?
Well, it's one of the questions that you didn't ask. So, and you kept to those five questions, or did you have follow-up questions a lot?
No, but I think it's the same. It was meant to be a template, because anytime you ask any 36 people five questions, you're going to get a bunch of different answers, and you extrapolate different things, when you're, just being a journalist or interviewing people, and you kind of can extract things that you think you want to get, or you try to get childhood stories or things, or you start asking why, and it naturally unfolds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're not just like, one sentence answers, as you saw from the book. They get into detail. Some of them, we're going to tell you more if they obviously have a liquor brand, or how the process they went through, or things like that. And, where you find the main thing too, I think you saw, we put the country flag, and I tried to get as many international guys and gals as I could, because with the advent of the Olympics, golf being readmitted back into the Olympics for the first time, 1904. So that's exciting. And the fact that the leaderboard is no longer Americans, I think American golfers themselves are more comfortable with seeing guys, whether it's Luke Donald or Rory McIlroy or whatever, holding the top, you know, few spots, which didn't happen for a very long time. So I think they're becoming more familiar. So then they thought, like, well, if you could know that Martin Laird from Scotland, you know, Iron Brew is the only drink that outsells Coca-Cola anywhere in the world, in Scotland, is where they have that.
Wow.
You know, and it's, you know, a kind of soft drink, you know, that's apparently good for when you have a hangover as well.
So. From being at the 19th hole a little too long.
Right.
And you got to speak with Arnold Palmer?
I did, yes. And what a gentleman. I mean, I think he gave me about an hour and a half of his time, which
is
very, very generous of him. And he is, we can't ask for a better, you know, brand ambassador for golf than Arnold Palmer.
Right. And there are many out there that we would had our hopes on to be the ambassador, but Nicklaus and Palmer are way, way out there.
They are.
Is he, in fact, an Arnold Palmer, is that his favorite drink?
That is his favorite drink. But, you know, he also said that, told me straight away that he, Kettle on the Rocks. You know, Kettle One on the Rocks is what he has when he's having a cocktail.
Great. Let's cover some more people and more stories instead of just drinks, because I just love stories. Tell me a story, Alyssa. Tell me
a story from the book.
Let's just keep it in the book.
Night time.
we'll talk afterwards about other. But no, let's talk about the book and those questions that you had, and I'm sure you didn't get bored asking those five questions that you probably were getting, you know, in anticipation. You were excited about asking these questions when you finally got the time. And when you were with these people, was it like, by the way, can I ask you some questions, or did you have to set up with a publicist? And,
you know, the wonderful thing is, quite honestly, I did a lot of them live with the active players that are on tour at the Barclays and in Boston at the Deutsche, because it was an opportunity that I could grab them, get them. I was there for like the week of each of those tournaments earlier, you know, early in the week, and get them. And if they didn't do it right, you know, right then and there, and obviously having been in golf long enough, you know when to ask. It's not, you know, 10 minutes before they're going to tee off.
Right.
It's when they're done, after they've had lunch, when you see them coming out and you grab them, or would grab them and say, can we set up a time? And a lot of them were really great. Some of them were done on a driving range. Some of them we had lunch. You know, it all depends, just more probably to how well I knew the person or what have you. And
did they, you know, in the sense of like you approach them with, I'm writing a book and I have five questions. Will you agree to be in this book type of thing?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And did anybody?
And they saw a PowerPoint of what it was going to look like, and it pretty much came out exactly like what it was going to look like.
Awesome.
We didn't stray too far. You know, and I did Arnold's first. So I wanted people to know, and that was the example that we used, that he was going to be in it.
Well, that kind of opened some doors. We started with Arnold. Oh, sure. If you did Arnold Palmer.
The other thing, too, is you have to think that, you know, given the title of the book, Two Good Rounds, and that it's about drinks, we'd be extremely remiss. Arnold is the only one that has a drink named after him.
Right. Well, Shirley Temple.
Yes, but I don't think Shirley Temple was a golfer.
No, I don't think so either. As a matter of fact, we got to change that. You know, little kids order Shirley Temples. They have no idea who she is, right? We got to come up with a new name. Yeah. Anyway,
Miley Cyrus? I don't know. I can't help you.
Yeah, right. Let's cover some of these questions then. Special memory. If I ask you, you know, your question about do you have a special memory, who's the first person that comes to your mind?
My mind is a special memory of interviewing in the book.
Yeah. Like somebody's answer. Like, you know, it's like, oh, this person had such a great story.
Jack's story about the wig.
Nicklaus?
Some people know about the wig story. Pardon?
Mr. Nicklaus?
Is that
the Jack you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay. The wig?
Yeah, there's a wig story, and it's kind of floated around. I don't know how much, you know, I've heard it mentioned a couple times in different places, but, you know, not only, I'll tell you the story, but he said that what happened was, he definitely said back in the 1960s and 70s, it was common for the clubs, you know, to have what they call the jam sessions. So after tournament play, people would all go to the clubhouse, and this was particularly popular at the Bob Hope, you know, in Palm Springs, where they frequently had these sessions, and it was a lot of fun, and you'd musicians and celebrities would be there, Sinatra types and what have you. And they would, you know, you'd go with your wife, your girlfriend, what have you, and they would really just have these jam sessions, music, what have you. And he said that he and Arnold Palmer were, as he remembers it, walking to the bathroom, and on the way back, they accidentally brushed up against a lady who had a wig on. And one of them brushed up against her, and the wig knocked off. And they picked it up and put it on one of their heads and went straight to the dance floor. And there's a picture of them arm in arm dancing, and they kept, you know, putting the wig on each other's head. But the picture that's taken and that's in the book is with, you know, Jack has the wig on his head, and he and Arnold are dancing cheek to cheek.
Oh, my God. And what about
that? Very funny.
Yeah, but what about that woman? She must have been mortified.
That's what he said. He says he feels so bad for the woman. She must have been mortified. And
unless she now has the greatest story of all time.
Right.
But does she want
to own up to that?
Yeah, exactly. That was the other thing. It's like, oh, I have the story that I can't tell you because I'm just too embarrassed about it.
Right. But, you know, he talked about the Crosby and the Hope and how the clubhouse and those events were a big deal. And, you know, you and I were talking about that earlier, which is just the part of getting back to socialization and people enjoying their time and connecting with one another in a human fashion, not just through technology or what have you, or just playing and then leaving. So,
well, golf is the ultimate in social networking, I think.
You know, absolutely.
Way before the internet and before Facebook, there was golf, and I think it's so important. So these guys totally get it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they do, they did, and you know, I think it's you know, kind of strayed away from that. I think people's time restraints and technology and what have you, and maybe a down economy. But
so you've talked to gentlemen who had their heyday in the 60s and earlier. What about the youngsters? You know, what about the young guys today? Did you get a chance to talk to some of the young tour players, and what was the feeling from them, the big difference from your perspective?
Yeah, I did. It was really nice. You know, Keegan Bradley, Matt Kuchar, Luke Donald, you know, those guys are now all doing extremely well. You know, it's refreshing. You know, Luke Donald, you know, he has a wine and, you know, enjoys spending time with his family and being home, and that seemed like a common thing. I mean, the ones that I happened to pick, I think, also are extremely family oriented, especially Matt Kuchar. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Keegan Bradley, I always joke, you know, when I sent him the book, I said, thank you for giving me a reason to put Tom Brady in the book. So he said that was like a big highlight when he had won. You know, after he won the PGA Championship, he woke up and he had a text from Tom Brady.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
So, yeah, it is interesting. And it's also interesting to hear these people more humanized in the sense that, you know, they all have their sports heroes and things like that.
Yeah, what is it about athletes that want to be rock and roll stars and rock and rollers that want to be pro athletes?
I know.
Isn't that funny? It happens a lot. Were there any people that you approached that said, no, thank you?
Yeah, few. They're not in the book.
And they're not in the conversation either?
No, not really.
Okay.
You know, I don't think it's necessary. You know, just,
yeah, let's focus on the
some
book.
People for, just a few, and there's some people for reasons that, you know, it's understandable that, you know, either don't drink and did in the past or what have you. Or
oh,
just
right.
Wasn't their thing, so it's fine.
But John Daly, you got a chance to talk to John Daly, or you just know about
his job? He did not want to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that makes sense. You know, guys who's had battles with that stuff. You just want to, do I really have to talk about that? Because he probably has stories that he may not remember, but he definitely wants to forget.
Right, but I think you saw, and it's difficult too, because until, like you said, there's not really anything that's out there, you know, that's particularly like this. And it's, I think people were probably more concerned that, you know, it wasn't going to be done the way it was done. So it's very respectful, and it's not meant to tell stories or tales or disclose anything that isn't, you know, socially acceptable, and just more a tribute to representing whether it's your country and learning a little bit more or more about family, socializing, or celebration.
And that was one of the elements.
Not at all a tell-all.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the elements of the book that stood out to me that I appreciated, in the sense that it's almost like you're an old school sports journalist, where in the days of Babe Ruth, who, you know, these guys had their flaws and they had their bouts with, you know, like we now know Mickey Mantle had played hungover many times, played baseball, and writers wouldn't talk about that in those days. But now there's so many outlets, and everybody's looking for their angle, and everyone's looking to get their Pulitzer or something. But every reporter's trying to find something that nobody else has, that they have. It seems like they just don't have respect for privacy for these guys. And yet you treated this with, here's these great stories, but I'm not going to get into some ugly stuff here.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. And there's books that are coming out now today, the recent book that came out about Tiger Woods, but it's Hank Haney's story, but it's all about the time he spent with Tiger Woods.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I would say that I think some of these people are not necessarily looking for a Pulitzer, but to get recognition on TMZ.
Oh yeah, there's your Pulitzer.
No, you know, I think it's a different, and it's really unfortunate for the sport that it's not considered. I think before, you know, what's for the best for the sport rather than what's best for a particular individual or things that are harmful. I mean, I just don't think it's necessary to put things out there that you know are going to be harmful.
Yeah. Yeah.
To individuals and or the greater good. I'm not saying that you can't tell the truth, but that's unnecessary. That's like unnecessary information. There's nothing there that I think is necessary, relevant, important.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not relevant. Why are we going there? And sometimes I'm sure that sometimes in an interview somebody will answer a question and then say to themselves, why did I say that? Why did I do that? And then it comes out later on. Terrible. You've been around, obviously, on the marketing side and of golf. You've been on the journalistic side of golf. Some days it seems that golf is flourishing, and some days, these days, it's struggling. Do you get a sense or get the opportunity to have conversations with these tour players about how would they cure the golf industry and what they think the problems are?
No, I didn't necessarily have those type of conversations. I think that some of them I know from the, like Ernie Els and his golf course design division. And so because I have been on the business side, so I kind of know what the fabric is of what is going on. And I spend a good deal of time attending, you know, international, whether it's international golf travel market or other international golf networks, so you kind of understand what's going on globally. And obviously, there's a big push towards Asia, but I always, you know, caution people that the people that are benefiting from Asia is golf course designers. You can't grow golfers overnight. So just because you put a golf course doesn't mean there's all of a sudden a golf demographic, i.e. to sell clubs. Yes, it's going to slowly, but it's going to take a generation or two. But, you know, you don't have it just because you put a golf course there doesn't mean you have instant golfers.
Mm-hmm.
Population.
Right.
So
yeah.
Anything that is consumer driven.
Yeah. Why do people think if you build it, they will come is actually a fact?
Right. Yes, they will. But they don't come overnight and in groves of, you know, all of a sudden you have, a quarter of the Chinese population either.
Yeah.
It takes time. We all know we all play golf. It doesn't happen overnight.
Right. I recently played with a Golf Smarter listener who contacted me, and he's an Israeli, and he plays golf. And it was so interesting. He now lives in London. He's been there for 7 years, and that's when he learned to play golf. He told me he wanted to play something that he could take back to Israel that nobody else would play. So he started out with cricket and said, yeah, my knees, I'm never going to be able to take this. So he started playing golf and fell in love with it, and then reached out to me and said, I'm coming to Northern California. Can we play? And I just found it so interesting. But, you know, again, there's a country that I don't know if golf's going to take off in Israel, you know? It's not one of those things. I'm sure in your column on the Lip that syndicated and found, where can we find your column on the web, obviously, but name some of the URLs that we can find your column so we can read what you're doing.
Sure, on the lip.com, cybergolf.com, which is pretty big. They have a tab that they have an on the Lip tab. Similar, you know, a column that I do monthly is Two Good Rounds. So on the Two Good Rounds, there's a Two Good Rounds column. Mm-hmm. And like 3 weeks ago, I think it was, I was in Tunisia on a golf trip. So that was pretty interesting. You know, I got to ride a camel and do some fun things and try Tunisian beer and learned a little bit about their what's going on there golf-wise. So, you know, fun things like that. That's also in New England Golf Monthly and a Golfer's Guide. And,
congratulations.
Yeah, a bunch of different people pick it up.
Yeah, so. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, it is fun.
Is it basically you write a column and then you publish it in all these places? Or like for
correct.
Two Good Rounds?
Yeah.
Okay, so twogoodrounds.com, you're not necessarily writing this story that is what the book is based on. You're not continuing that?
It's a little bit, but just not tour players. But it's looking at the social and cultural aspects or something fun or something unique and different. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a microbrewery and something in Nantucket, a microbrewery and, you know, Maya Comet or, you know, where you got Sanctity in Nantucket, big golf courses or, you know, whether it be Maryland or the Carolinas. So domestic or international, just where, you know, something takes me or where I've been or the Breakers, the Tapestry Room, some type of history, culture, socialization with golf.
And golf being the center point of all of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great launching point. Golf is a great launching point to go in all those different directions.
Mm-hmm. And focusing on the lifestyle and social aspect of golf.
Right. And that brings you back to the bar.
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes it's just an Arnold Palmer.
And just an Arnold Palmer. Okay, so I'm going to go back to a couple of the questions as we wrap this up that I want to know that you, when you asked about, like, say, they got the hole-in-one, and do they buy everyone in the clubhouse a drink? Where?
Nope.
Nobody. Nobody. It's like,
oh.
I thought it was just you buy your foursome. You have to buy everybody in the clubhouse a drink? And I've also heard.
A lot of guys did it during tournaments or what have you, and they didn't. They did not buy the clubhouse around.
Wow. Does that reputation follow them when they do that or when they don't?
No,
do
I just think amongst the pros, it's kind of something, you know, something that they I guess don't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I've also heard, and whether this is true or not, I heard that you not just buy everybody in the clubhouse around, you buy everybody in the clubhouse until they can't get up.
Oh, I don't know about that. I didn't hear
and
about that.
I was like, no, come on, really? That's terrible. I don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, there are other nice things. That are like Boo Weekly said that when he won in 2007, when he won the Verizon Heritage in Hilton Head, you know, he stayed around the locker room and buying drinks and hanging out with, like, the volunteers and the maintenance people. So some people have told me some really nice – you'll see there's some really nice stories in here as well. You know, Ruji Mata from Japan, they actually have insurance that they take out, people in Japan, because, you know, not for pros but for – amateurs that belong to private clubs, because exactly what you said, it can get crazy because there's a custom that you have to have something made, like a towel or balls printed, announcing that you made a hole-in-one and give it to every member of the club.
Oh, man.
So it can get very costly, so they have insurance. They say the insurance can run like $2,000 or something.
Wow. It's like, so you got a hole-in-one, you can't celebrate. It's like, uh-oh. It's like when my son graduated college.
Oh, you took out the insurance, I guess you can.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, it's like my son graduated college. He says, please, don't send me any congratulatory letters. I want condolence letters. This has been the best 4 years of my life. I don't want to leave here.
Right, exactly.
And so, okay, so no one's buying when they get the hole-in-one, and hole-in-one are not that rare for touring pros, it seems like. So we got the favorite drinks, got the favorite – what about favorite clubhouse or favorite 19th hole?
Anyone? I heard a bunch of tap room, the tap room in Pebble Beach, Arnold Palmer's, the Bay Hill men's locker room. Something must be going on in there. I don't know. I haven't been in there, so I can't tell you. But something must be going on.
Exactly. Well, I'm not going to tell because I've never been there. Well, listen, congratulations. This is a really fun book, and you'd think, oh, five questions, how good could this be? But obviously, those five questions are loaded, no pun intended. And the book not only has these great stories, but has wonderful pictures of all these people and you with famous people, too. And I wish you all the luck in the world. I think it's great. Again, it's called Two Good Rounds, 19th Hole Stories from the World's Greatest Golfers. And we have it here on the Golfers Mart at golfsmarter.com, where we have all of our books. It's listed there. So if you want to get a copy for yourself, you can get it on the Kindle, or you can get it just buy the hardback for yourself. Is it hardback only or hardback and paperback?
No, it's hardback. Yeah, it's a little coffee table kind of book.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's quick. You know, you can just pick it up anytime and read a couple pages and then put it down, because they're not long and it's not a continuous story. But you know where it's going to head. It's just you're fascinated about these people. I think it's a great idea. Congratulations on finding that niche, and best of luck on your column. We'll be following it for a long time to come. Thanks for joining us here today on Golf Smarter.
Thank you, Fred. It's been great, and I wish you continued success. I think it's really great what you're doing.
Next up, Jim Waldron of Balance Point Golf Schools joins us for two episodes to discuss the state of Tiger's swing and what we can learn from it to improve our game. A couple years ago, I discovered a golf product that I felt exceeded my personal requirements of form, function, and being very cool. So I ordered some and have been using them as gifts. The responses have included, "Can I get one of these from my friend?" And also, "Thanks, Fred. I never play around without your gift in my pocket." And now, it's my gift to you. I'm so excited to introduce you to the greatest divot repair tool ever. Here are some of the immediate benefits of the Golf Smarter Divot Repair Tool. One, you immediately become a prouder golf citizen because this durable and high-tech switchblade makes it cool to clean up your divots and others around each green for those creeps who don't clean up after themselves. Number two, because the removable ball marker with the Golf Smarter logo has a very large number one on it, you become a better putter because it increases your confidence as you repeat to yourself, "One putt, one putt, one putt." Number three, because it's a switchblade, you won't be bruising your leg or poking holes in your pants with the standard boring divot tool. And number four, you become a Golf Smarter ambassador by sharing stories and tips with your foursome that you've heard on your favorite golf podcast. So please, pick up the Golf Smarter Switchblade Divot Repair Tool, the greatest divot repair tool ever, at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.